왜
한국에서
찾았어? 왜 찾았어?
문
찾자.
문 찾자.
No.
Oh, I'll do what you want.
문 찾자.
Sexually, I'll be your slave.
문 찾자.
왜?
문 fucking 찾지.
Who's Manchester fucking?
Hey, Zona. No, seriously, I need a fucking shit.
I don't care, that's enough.
No,
that's enough. That is more than enough.
No,
if you want it, you're welcome. You're not my kind of girl.
What?
That's enough. You have to leave.
Okay. It's okay. He knows. Hades is so good.
I need a nice girl.
Hades is
all
f***ing it's not
insane.
About who you need.
You're
it's not about who.
Yeah, it is. You're f***ing insane.
It's not about who you need. It's about who you give a f*** now. Baby.
F***. I thought you were only kidding, but you're not.
You need a poo.
You poo. Go on. Right now. I do need a sample of DNA. See, I thought you were kidding. And I've taken enough. This is f***ing bullshit. You're lucky I haven't chucked you off my f***ing balcony, you goddamn psycho little bitch. Who the f*** do you think I am? Yeah, do your Muay Thai now. What? What? Got something to say? Say it.
Yeah.
Say it. What?
She's a sexist.
Yeah, right. I'm the one who's injured. You don't have a goddamn scratch on you, you little bitch.
Seriously. I didn't.
Seriously, what? Seriously, what? Seriously, what? I thought you were just playing around. But I'm f***ing sick of this shit. Goddamn psycho. I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna walk you out of this apartment. Just the way you are. You're not gonna collect any belongings or anything, you're just gonna walk out. And I'm gonna slam the door on you. You understand? If you try to pull anything, I'll knock you out. I'll knock you the f*** out. Do you understand? Do you understand? Do you understand? Come on, get up. Get up! Get up!
I'm so sorry.
I don't care. Get up. You don't understand, do you? You don't understand anything at all, do you? You don't understand. You don't understand, do you? You just don't understand. Let go.
You think you can hit me and I'll just like fall down like in the movies?
Huh? You don't understand thing, do you? Let go of it. Let go. Let go. Let go.
Do you think you are?
No!
Hmm?
No! No! No!
You're trying to kill me, huh?
No!
Why did you try to hit me with that?
No!
Everybody, welcome to a very special bonus episode of Cold Case Murder Mysteries. I'm your host, Ryan Krause, and it's great to be with you once again as we take a quick look at a hotly debated case from 2014 involving the death of 26-year-old Warina Wright, who plunged 14 stories to her untimely fate from the high-rise balcony of an apartment located along Australia's Gold Coast. On the night of August 7th, the visitor from New Zealand met up with a local playboy named Gable Tosti after the two found each other on the popular dating app Tinder. With only a few days left in the country, Warina was undoubtedly thinking this was going to be a harmless hookup, and the two of them would part ways in the aftermath, most likely to never see each other again. But after a wild night of drinking and sex, the early morning hours brought out the lurking demons, and soon one of them was dead. But this question remains, and while a jury has answered it, the public continues to search for the truth. Was Warina Wright's death an accident or murder? So, we're going to take a quick look at that, but first, a few notes. Please follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and your 5-star ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts are very much appreciated. Beyond that, please be sure to download the bonus episode near the top of my feed introducing a new true crime podcast, if you haven't done so already. And finally, this is a reminder that all new full-length episodes of this show are available only by subscription through my website, coldcasemurdermysteries.com. With very affordable plans starting as low as $1, there's an option for everybody, so be sure to head over to coldcasemurdermysteries.com to check it out. I've already covered the strange and fascinating case of Christopher Porco this month, where a man gets up for work and goes through his normal routine after receiving numerous strikes to the head with a fireman's axe while sleeping the night before. And next up is the feature episode looking at the highly controversial 2011 death of Carbondale, Colorado resident Morgan Ingram. This one's a real rabbit hole. You definitely don't want to miss it. And finally, I'll be taking a look at another controversial event that transpired on Thanksgiving 2012 in Minnesota when Vietnam War veteran Byron David Smith shot two teens attempting to burglarize his home, resulting in both of their deaths. But when police arrived, what they found looked more like an execution than a thwarted theft. So was it self-defense or murder? Join me on coldcasemurdermysteries.com today. Okay, so getting back to the 2014 death of Warriena Wright, this tale actually starts long before that. And to get a strong grasp of what happened, you really have to focus on the survivor in the story, none other than Gable Tosti. Because Warriena's death is a matter of circumstance, and essentially unrelated to her past. There's not a practical way to observe her life and say, oh, that's how she ended up in this mess. On the other hand, Gable Tosti proves that he carries a long-winded narrative of bad behavior behind him like a ball and chain. You see, Warriena wasn't the first young woman the aptly nicknamed Gold Coast Gable encountered after meeting on Tinder. In fact, by the time this tragic event takes place, GT, as he's also known, already claims to have slept with 260 women he met using this app. That's not even considering that this guy had become somewhat of a legend in the local nightlife scene by that point, getting banned from several clubs and being virtually unwelcome in that many more. Harassing women, arguing with bouncers, drunk driving, a high-speed chase, something was bound to happen. And it did. This is the death of Warriena Wright. Now, turning the pages back to the beginning of this tale, it all seems to start in Gable's late teens. While we don't have much info on his formative years to guide us in the psychology of his life choices, what we do have readily available is a significant amount of symbolism. So, there's a period of 5 years from approximately 2005 to 2010 where Gable Tosti virtually disappears from society, and it comes at the hands of his first brush with the law. But it wasn't jail. In fact, there wasn't any punishment at all. Gable was apparently the mastermind of a fake ID scam during Schoolies Week in Australia, which, for those who aren't familiar, is an event where recent graduates get together to party before heading their separate ways in life. So, for Gable to lead the way on this idea of making fake IDs, the symbolism tells us that he's the most likely person to conceive of the idea because it's exactly what he's lacking. Always look in the mirror for the truth reversed in its image, in the same way you'd realize that somebody who consumes rage-filled music has the most anger to release. He's offering a way for people to be something they're not, specifically in the form of identity. Gable desperately seeks to fake identity in lieu of legitimately being able to create one. But the most important subconscious implication of his intentions is that the inauthentic identities in question are all being created for the purpose of partying. More specifically, they're created with the intention that the people adopting these new identities will then be able to party without any consequences from police. Of course, that notion has its limits because you can get arrested for the behavior you display while drunk, whether it's simply the act of being drunk, or in more severe cases, you assault somebody. Drunk driving is another major concern within this consideration. So, the fake identities Gable sells offer false entitlement, and in the absence of the maturity the law deems required to properly handle the responsibility. Therefore, at the root of Gable's motive is the truth that he's trying to improve his life by way of false entitlement, as he has not only entitled the kids to whom he's selling, but entitled himself to an even far greater extent by being the distributor. The bottom line in this analysis? In relation to being able to party without the maturity to handle it, and while in conflict with what the law dictates, Gable Tosti creates a situation where he negates that concern through entitlement. In order to do so, he has to believe he isn't going to get caught and punished. If that happens, though, he'll realize his philosophy is self-destructive and nonsensical, one that leads to tragedy. On the other hand, if Gable gets away with this illegal activity, he isn't going to learn anything because his notion about being entitled is proven correct. and that's what happens. Gable is arrested for masterminding this $30,000 fake ID scheme, but ultimately receives no punishment when he appears in court. He walks, which is really odd. For instance, in America, a typical result might be a $1,000 fine and 6 months to 1 year in jail for the manufacture and sale of a fake ID. For $30,000 worth, one could easily speculate the penalty could be far worse. But he gets nothing. At least, not from the law. And this is where we get an inkling of where this sense of entitlement began to develop. It has a source. For the next 5 years, from approximately age 18 through 23, Gable basically disappears, withdrawing from any type of a social life altogether, in favor of working at his father's carpet business and keeping himself out of trouble. In his words, he had to, quote, cut off contact with literally all my friends and basically disappear, end quote. But a cursory examination of the situation reveals he didn't have to do anything of the sort. There was no punishment handed down by the courts. He was free to do as he liked. Unless he was being instructed by an outside source. But if you're 18 years of age, and the law says you have been cleared of accountability to a crime you've committed, then it's a fact you can do whatever you like moving forward, as long as it's within the confines of the law. Of course, if your sense of entitlement was learned from somebody who behaved in the same manner, then you might be inclined to accept non-traditional punishment from the source of said entitlement. In this case, that person is clearly Gable's father, as we'll learn later on by explicit example, but for now it's wholly implied through Gable's words that he was forced to disappear from his social life by an outside force. If not himself or the law, one can only assume it's his parents. So what transpires from there is that Gable goes to work in his father's business as a carpet layer, and that's where the symbolism becomes mind-blowing for me, and also offers abundant insight into the root of the problem facing Gable Tosti. His father has seemingly decided that extracting his son from a social life where he could potentially get in trouble is the proper way to have him behave better. In reality, however, he's just putting a shark behind glass where it remains harmless in its aquarium as it's routinely fed and cared for in exchange for its confinement. When released back into the ocean, however, one thing becomes apparent. It doesn't know how to properly interact with its environment, specifically in terms of how it relates to other creatures, especially within its own species. There are a number of concerns for releasing a captive animal, but one of the initial problems is trying to gauge how it will react when going from immersion in a domesticated environment ruled by what essentially amounts to familial authority figures in the form of humans, to being left to its own devices in the wild, where it'll be forced to compete for survival with its peers in terms of predation. As the captive animal is used to being rewarded with food for engaging in compliance with its captor's wishes, rather than dominance over its peers, it has been trained to not compete in order to survive. Instead, it relies on compliance. But in the wild, complying with the alpha's wishes in order to be fed equates to submission. Which is fine if the recently released animal in question isn't an alpha himself. But if he is, and feels inclined to compete with the other alphas once released, in order to attain dominance, the results are often disastrous. Therefore, it's far more common to nurse an injured wild animal back to health in captivity and release it than it is to raise an animal in captivity and release it upon reaching adulthood. By that time, the animal has neglected to build sufficient predatory skills, or even any at all, and will be immersed in an environment where he's the only exception. And what often happens in these cases is that the animal, in an attempt to make up for lost time learning these skills, and simultaneously out of the desperation to acquire them quickly, begins to behave erratically in its plight to gain on the momentum of its peers, who have so much more experience. One behavior that frequently comes to bear is awkwardness, specifically in the form of trying too hard. The animal makes persistent and continual advances on prey and mates, with behavior fueled by seeking quantity rather than geared toward calculation that renders the conservation of resources. The bottom line? They're going to burn out. And if they keep it up, they're going to starve. This is not negotiable. It's nature. And if you starve in nature, you become something else's food. That's the chain. The only way to escape the chain and survive without developing proper predatory skills is through entitlement. So if you're a captive animal being fed by humans, one that is then suddenly released into the wild, you don't know what to do in the absence of that care. But all of the other animals around you know exactly how to behave in nature, by way of experience, leaving you to understand two things. One, due to lack of experience, you'll overcompensate in your efforts to catch up to your peers, or even surpass them, if in fact you believe you're an alpha predator. Two, the issue you're experiencing, at its root, is an identity crisis. The animal in question doesn't know how to make a transition from an entitled domestic environment to one where he'll have to fend for himself. He was rendered a beta in his captive beginnings, despite possessing alpha instincts, and never had to compete with others. But gifted with these elements of previously unutilized physical dominance and instinct, he'll assert them to get what he wants, in ignorance of the fact that his raw talent will succumb to inexperience. Ultimately, the answer to this conundrum is to alleviate any creature from having to cross the threshold of these two worlds, either the entitlement of domesticity or the unforgiving indifference of nature, in order to solidify one singular concept: identity. The entitled animal released into the wild from a situation of protected domesticity, one in which compliance negated consequence and routinely resulted in reward, has to fake its identity and distribute that new perception to all of its peers in order to be respected until it learns better. That's what Gable did. He made and sold fake IDs to his peers for lack of a better way to earn money. And it failed. So, he goes back to the domesticity of compliance in exchange for a reward. Gable gets a steady job with his father working as a carpet layer in the man's company, and in exchange stays out of trouble by not socializing. But here's the problem with that. Part of the process of developing emotional maturity, especially in that 18 to 23 range where Gable steps away from life, is making stupid mistakes related to poor behavior in order to see the error of your ways and ultimately grow to an adult who negates many of these concerns by way of better understanding through experience. Because the truth is this: people are rarely inspired to change when sailing through calm waters. It's the turbulence and precipitation of bad fortune that cause us to change directions. So for Gable Tosti, what he needed to do was retain his social life, but rebuild it in a way more suitable to refraining from the elements that got him in trouble. Instead, he essentially makes a deal with his father to stay out of trouble in exchange for resources. Basically, Gable hasn't changed. He's fulfilling a contract. This means that when Gable, aka the captive animal, is released back into the wild, it will be both in the absence of change and the binding terms of that agreement. By default, the result is a child who can pay his own bills and is going to revert to the behavior present in his life prior to the contract, as he has no social development from the last 5 years upon which to rely. Therefore, if he examines his past and realizes that there were actually no consequences for behaving like that, as proven by no punishment handed down by the courts, he's going to proceed in exactly what he was doing before to succeed, which is creating a fake identity. But this time the fake identity won't be used to make him money, it will be used to compensate him for the lost time when he didn't socialize. So instead of doing it to enable others to party, Gable is going to create a new identity for himself so that he can party. So this agreement with his father, unspoken or not, leaves Gable 5 years behind most people his age in terms of social development, but renders a person otherwise capable of being an adult, evidenced by the fact he goes to work every day and rents an apartment. Unfortunately, he's going to try to make up for the last 5 years by proving his societal worth in a manner suitable to that 18-year-old high school student who isn't yet able to navigate the adult world. At the core of this idea is the fact that, for a man, the nature of sex is based in conquest, while the nature of relationships is based in compromise. Anybody can have sex with another person without ever learning how to do it. It's a natural, intuitive process. But relationships are a human construct and require compromise because the path of your light source, aka your actions, routinely collides with the other person. The pathway to functionality within such agreements is very simply this: maturity. By butting heads with significant others and then meeting in the middle to progress, or even parting ways because we can't, we learn about who we are and what we want. However, if we perpetually engage in short-term relationships, such as hookups where it's implied there's no pressure to compromise, nothing ever changes. The man doesn't progress past the point of understanding how to deal with conquest. Compromise is foreign. And that's Gable Tosti as he ventures out into the world again. He isn't going to compromise. He's going to try to conquer everything in his path. And when the moment comes that he must compromise, he won't know how to do it. He'll hit the gas pedal on conquest. In the end, 26-year-old Warrior Wright will be dead. And Gable Tosti will run back to his daddy for help, instead of helping her. And when he does, the truth will be apparent in retrospect, specifically in the symbolism of the event. For 5 years, while Gable was ignoring his emotional development, he was laying carpet for his father. Now, what we need to consider about this endeavor is that carpet, despite any aesthetic or practical considerations, is disposable. It's little more than a layer of skin, so to speak, that goes on top of your floor. You can clean it every day and care for it meticulously, but eventually you need to shed the carpet in favor of a new one. So it's a temporary fix, and in terms of the hierarchy of floor coverings as it pertains to respect, carpet is in third place behind wood floors, specifically hardwoods, and rugs. A great rug could last a couple hundred years, and a great wood floor perhaps many times longer, while a carpet is very lucky to last even a decade. The reason the wood floor lasts so much longer is that it's foundational. It's actually part of the house. The rug and carpet, on the other hand, are a facade. They're intended to cover the foundation, often because the floors need work, and are therefore deemed disposable in the same manner as your clothes as they age. So what Gable is going to do in his private life, just as he does at work every day, is cover his old foundation with a facade that conceals the fact it needs work. That's how we get somebody called GT, a bad boy on the local nightlife scene. But before we get into that, it's interesting to note that the approximate period of time Gable left his social life is about the same as the length of time between when he returned and finally learned his lesson on the day of Warrior's death. So, in 2010, Gable espouses his desire to return to a normal social life in an online bodybuilding forum where he frequently comments, as he otherwise doesn't really seem to have too many friends. He's described as awkward, and he'll later be described as autistic in court by his lawyers, but nonetheless the guy is 6'3" tall, and by the opinions of most, a very good-looking dude. It's apparent his social skills aren't very well developed, but he's probably still going to succeed with women, at least in terms of hooking up. With that said, what we can expect is a person who will seek hookups, but nothing more significant because he doesn't possess the mental capacity to handle it properly. In short, he shows them his pretty carpet, in the form of his face, but can never let them know what's lurking beneath because it desperately needs work. Relationships bring about change, and he isn't looking for that. Gable isn't going to compromise. So, this all starts with the young man making a name for himself along the Gold Coast nightlife scene, where, as I said earlier, he gets banned from several establishments in incidents related to being excessively drunk and creepy to women. But again, he isn't going to change, so he blames the problem on the bouncers and bartenders at these places and continues to dig himself a hole. Meanwhile, he manages to start sleeping with women again. I mean, a lot of them. He's on the bodybuilding forum bragging about betting 100 ladies. But before long, that total has grown all the way to 260. And then he's telling everybody online that his confidence is growing with each one, but it's already evident that it's not confidence he speaks of. It's arrogance. If he's being kicked out of clubs, He's not being persistent in a way that's persuading anyone. He's doing it in a way that says he won't take no for an answer. At the bottom of that lake is the dark truth that, in relation to women, Gable Tosti only sees them in the context of being conquests. He doesn't feel he needs to adjust his strategy. He just feels that he needs to be persistent to get them to submit. And when that train crashes with a situation that absolutely cannot be resolved without compromise, the results are going to be explosive. Because what we're going to see is Warina Wright begging for compromise, screaming in fact, and Gable Tosti ignoring her in favor of pursuing conquest by any means necessary. Getting to the night of August 7th, Gable and Warina text each other after initially having contact about 3 days earlier. They agree to meet at a nearby mall, where they share a hug and move on to a local beer garden. They don't stay long, however, opting instead to grab a six-pack of beer and head back to Gable's 14th floor apartment. They listen to music, drink, and have sex, but what starts as a harmless good time without commitment soon becomes eerily antagonistic in tone. In the audio of the event, which was recorded in its entirety by Gable, the subtext of their words says the tension is escalating and they need to be separated. And the reason is this. They use their carpet to get into this situation, but once a problem begins, the only way out of it is by exposing the floors beneath. And the truth is ugly. So, in the audio of the event, coming down the ladder stretch prior to the fall, it's apparent Warina is excessively intoxicated. She seems to be in a state where she's not quite articulating herself very well and is feeling a little hostile. This isn't a big deal. In fact, it's just an indication that it's late, she's had a lot to drink, and she needs to go home. Staying with Gable is probably not a very good idea. That's what needs to happen in this situation. The two of them need to come to a compromise that involves separating, most reasonably by Warina leaving, because Gable lives there. But this needs to happen safely, and as a result of a decision by both parties, in order to avoid further conflict. That's how things like this normally end. It's the right thing to do. If you walk away, the problem is gone. It's just a one-night stand. Everybody goes home and wakes up the next day. But Gable's desire to conquer, combined with Warina's alcohol consumption, will make this an impossible task. Gable seems to be the one who's more coherent in terms of intoxication, even if very angry. He understands exactly what he's doing, as he spells out in his intentions, in no uncertain terms, each time he speaks. Warina, on the other hand, really just needs to be put to bed. There's not another way to say it. It's late, and she's had enough. All Gable needs to do is act like a gentleman, even if Warina can't reciprocate the consideration because she's had too much to drink. He needs to get her home. And this proves difficult because Gable, as I said, will only deal in the context of conquest. He has to win. So he says to her, quote, "I think you should leave," end quote. He's expecting her to just suddenly start behaving differently now that he said that. But in reality, he needs to adjust to her behavior, not get her to comply by demanding her to take action. He should offer to get her a ride home or walk her, and if she refuses, he should suggest he's going to call the police to remove her. What Gable can't do in this situation is rely on the strategy of conquest. She isn't going to do what he wants. That's the whole point of antagonizing someone. By employing conquest, he's leaving himself one option after she refuses to leave on her own. And that, of course, is taking her out by force, which is dangerous for a lot of reasons, one being her drunken state once you leave her alone to get home. The other is that a fight of some sort is likely to break out, the later interpretation of which is going to be very ugly for everybody involved. So, to summarize, you have to come to a compromise, or, in the absence of that, summon compromise in the form of intervention by police. But what you can't do, if you're Gable Tosti, is try to win this game, because then you're going to lose in a way you never imagined. The act of war is nothing more than the refusal to accept compromise. And what is the most prominent byproduct of war? Death. So, while Warina is trying to provoke Gable by throwing ornamental rocks at him, he should be calling the police to ask them to have her removed. Is that something you want to do? No. But the alternative is to utilize force, which he should refrain from until after she's initiated the same. Instead, however, he's calling her a little psycho bitch and telling her that he should just chuck her off his balcony. He actually says that, and then she dies in a fall from his balcony. But before this happens, the two exchange words again, and Gable tells Warina, quote, "I'll knock you the fuck out," end quote. At this point, it's obvious this is headed to a bad place. More specifically, a physical confrontation. The details of what happens next are a little murky, but clearly the two of them come together, whether it's mutual or Gable attacks Warina. Because Gable wants her to leave, and she refuses, my assumption is that he attacked her to initiate the physical confrontation. Apparently, in a later recorded conversation with his father, Gable admits that he tackled Warina to the floor. So, this is when Warina begins to repeatedly scream the word no, indicating that the altercation has begun and Gable has taken a forcible action against her wishes. With the case being that he's grabbed her and intends to separate the two of them to end the altercation, we get a great sense of his motives by the choice of where he puts her. If you want her to go home, you open the front door and leave her in the hallway, even if it means calling the cops afterward because she won't leave. But if you want to separate the two of you, yet do so strictly in the context of conquest, you put her on the balcony because it allows you to control her fate. It allows you to win. But only in your own mind, and by way of misguided logic. What's really happening is that we're seeing the culmination of a lot of anger toward women come rising to the surface in Gable, ready to explode in violence. Tracing his steps back over the course of his days as a playboy, what we learn, aside from the fact he calls Warina, quote, insane and a psycho bitch, when she's really just drunk, is that Gable has developed a habit of doing this which coincides perfectly with the timing of his rise to become GT, the local nightlife star and ladies' man. And what he learned, though failed to realize until it was too late, is that he doesn't have any idea how to communicate with women beyond sex. On many occasions, he not only posted pictures of his conquests in online chat rooms, such as the aforementioned bodybuilding forum, but also posted their conversations on Tinder in an effort to prove that young women are, quote, such head cases. He then goes on to pontificate about how unreasonable it is for a woman to enter his bedroom without any intention of having sex, as though it's inexplicable, a statement precipitated by the fact he was accused of groping. Of course, just like with the bouncers and the bar staff, the woman was the problem, not him. Yet, 2 weeks before Warina met her death, guess who led police on a high-speed chase where he was apparently 4 times over the legal limit for alcohol consumption while driving and was later jailed over it? That would be Gable Tosti, who goes on to write to police after Warina's death and in reference to the high-speed pursuit that he's glad it happened because it was, quote, the wake-up call I needed. He also states, quote, I am thankful that it happened before something potentially much worse happened, end quote. Are you fucking kidding me? Is this guy absolutely out of his mind? 2 weeks after the high-speed chase, he was involved in a drunken altercation with a woman in which she plunges 14 stories to her death from his apartment balcony. That was how he followed up the police chase. Yet when he writes this letter months later, he poses the high-speed pursuit with police as something that changed him by way of a, quote, wake-up call. So tell me, who's the head case here? But back to Gable's apartment, Warina is screaming the word no while we assume she's in Gable's clutches. At this point, it isn't any more of a burden upon him to put her in the hallway outside the door than it is to place her on the balcony. One is far safer than the other and accommodates the ultimate goal of separating the two parties without further physical incident, even if Warina chooses to continue screaming in the hallway. At least there's a physical barrier in that instance where Warina has the option to leave and Gable can call police without being accosted by her throwing decorative rocks at him in the process. In fact, it isn't just sensible, it's the only choice once you've decided to engage physical contact. Anything else brings about the perception of a crime and prolongs the incident. But even though that's what Gable should do, we have a man who, just moments earlier, said he should just chuck this young lady off his balcony. Accordingly, he takes her out on his balcony and locks her out there as he returns to within the confines of his apartment. Warina keeps screaming in the process, of course, specifically and very clearly saying that she wants to go home. The only reason for Gable to not comply is that he plans to take further action to turn this into a more definitive conquest. If she leaves now, she gets what she wants. He was willing to let her leave when it was what he wanted, and asked for it explicitly because it would be a win for her to leave voluntarily. But she didn't, and now he has to punish her to get her to submit further in order to win. It's all about conquest. In that light, he opts to imprison her on his balcony. But she's begging to go home. So if she's begging to leave, and he won't let her because he's angry with her actions, it means he has plans to retaliate in some way to turn this into a win. As he's already resorted to physicality and imprisonment, there isn't any reason for Warina to believe he'll revert to kinder behaviors as his anger escalates. In short, she has every reason to believe she's in danger. Gable has made it clear he isn't going to let her leave. Even if it's only to temporarily imprison her, the implication is clear that she's going to suffer. And if somebody is already intoxicated to an extent that she can't properly interact because of inhibited decision-making, an escalation of fear is likely going to cause her to behave desperately, rather than encourage her to comply. And there we have it. That's what Gable Tosti is looking for. Compliance. The same thing that his father demanded of him for all those years he didn't mature. His immaturity has left him to adopt his father's policy of compliance in exchange for the reward of freedom. So just as Gable was held captive for 5 years in a life where he was denied social interaction until he complied with the wishes of a parental authority, he plans to do the same to Warina by taking on his father's role. And just check out the way he talks to her once she's captive. Warina is screaming for him to let her out so she can go home, and Gable tells her, quote, "I would, but you've been a bad girl." It's like he's trying to punish a child. She's only going to be rewarded with freedom for submitting to this attempt at conquest. There isn't anything for her to learn here, in the same way there was nothing for Gable to learn being pulled from his social life by his father for 5 years. In fact, at the bottom of this mess is the only truth we can rely upon. Gable has become his father in order to counteract the emotional pain inflicted by the man. As I've said before, always look for the mirrored image of what's causing the pain. He's unable to properly communicate with women because of this misguided 5-year societal absence that was aimed at improvement but resulted in ignorance. Therefore, since his father was unwilling to compromise, Gable is also unwilling to do the same and is going to commit to punishing Warina with little regard for consequence because he's convinced there's no suitable alternative. It's what he learned. And that's really scary, because now she's trapped on the balcony, screaming, and he's inside with his anger, taking deep breaths and contemplating his next move. There's no way for Warina to know what Gable intends to do next. The only logic she can apply here is that he isn't finished making her suffer. In my estimation, Warina feared for her life at this moment and had every right to believe that was a perfectly reasonable conclusion despite being intoxicated. Now, is it a good idea to try to escape down the balcony? If you feel that your life is in danger, and that there's less risk in climbing down the building than there is in riding out the situation? That's what you should do. The fact that Warina died doing it doesn't make it a stupid move, even if the chances of failure were great. It's all about the level of danger she felt she was experiencing and how she thought it would escalate. But given this extreme action, it appears Warina felt Gable might decide to kill her. Before he even puts her on the balcony, he makes a threat to throw her off it. When he proceeds in locking her out there, it's only logical to assume that he might fulfill the suggested notion of throwing her over the rail. Now, clearly Gable has created a situation of false imprisonment, one that the jailed person feels could lead to violence because it was expressly suggested in the form of throwing her off the same balcony on which she now stands. Therefore, any subsequent action Warina takes, in an effort to escape being wrongfully imprisoned, offers a certain degree of liability on Gable's behalf. He created the circumstance, out of desire, rather than necessity, and also unlawfully. And that's when Warina falls. At the time, Gable isn't at the door threatening her. He supposedly turned away from it, taking a few deep breaths and contemplating his next move. That's when he hears her scream and sees she's gone. According to witness testimony, there's no reason to believe she was pushed, as the fall resulted from trying to lower herself onto the balcony below. So that's when Gable hurries downstairs to help her, right? No chance. He doesn't even bother to look down at the street, let alone try to get Warina any type of help. He gets dressed and leaves the back door of the building, where he catches a ride. After walking the streets for a bit, Gable calls his father and explains that he didn't push Warina, repeatedly assuring the man he did nothing wrong and just, quote, chucked her out on the balcony, end quote. Meanwhile, the fucking police are looking for him, and he's trying to justify this shit to his dad while Warina dies a terrifying death that leaves her a bloody mess in the street. Yet, what's so fascinating is that all of this shit has been recorded, at least in terms of the audio. And that goes for just about everything in Gable's life. He records everything at his apartment, all the conversations on his phone, and even leaves his phone recording audio when he goes out to a party so he can remember what happened the next day if he should happen to black out from drinking. And most people would just say that's weird or creepy. And it is. But even more so, it's sad. Because this is why Gable records everything. Because he can't get back those years his father took from him. So he desperately tries to miss out on nothing at all every day after that moving into the future, no matter what it takes. Gable records all of his conquests with women in order to look back on them in the way that he's unable to for the 5 years his father extracted him from society. Now, this behavior is a result of social disease prevalent in parenting that dictates your child is not the problem, but being influenced by others who are. However, if your child is taking the same actions as those who are being deemed a poor influence, your child is not being influenced by those people, he is them. So, the belief is often held that misbehaving young people need to be extracted from the source of the poor behavior, when in reality, they've become the source. So, after being extracted from society for 5 years, ta-da, Gable is still the source. Nothing has changed, except that he's missed out on 5 years of social opportunities to succeed, fail, and everything in between, all of which amounts to wasted opportunity to learn more and mature. This is what was taken from him. Accordingly, when it leads to somebody else's death, we learn the reason Gable didn't know how to compromise is that his father didn't extend the lesson to him. Yet, in terms of the law, they go for a murder charge in this one, with a lesser charge of manslaughter also in consideration. But that's a bit of a mistake. This isn't murder. Does Gable bear responsibility in the events that transpired? Yes, certainly. But it doesn't seem that his actions directly, or even indirectly, led to an event I'd consider murder. I'm not a court of law, so I can't properly gauge his liability, except to say that he did not cause her death. It seems more accurate to say that he's clearly liable for the circumstance that precipitated her fall. He created that through physical action and offered no remedy to imprisonment. Essentially, Gable's actions unnecessarily confined Warina to a narrow set of choices in proceeding with that imprisonment, all of which compromised safety. Therefore, it's fair to say Gable created a situation that implied increasing danger conducive to Warina taking high-risk actions in the absence of better options. In the end, Gable was Warina's captor, and she his prisoner. That's a crime. But the jury didn't see it that way. And so Gold Coast Gable Tosti walked free. While Warina Wright is reduced to a memory in the hearts of her loved ones. Within those opposing ideas, there seems to be a total absence of justice. Yet, what we also find is the truth. So, as Gable Tosti walked out of the court building, deemed an innocent man in the eyes of the law, despite whatever controversy remained, he was free to behold in the eyes of spectators. What they saw was a young man who made his way to a street corner, where he stopped to comply with the red traffic light ahead. In that moment, he tilted his head back, looked to the sky, and closed his eyes. Moments later, the light turned green. Gable opened his eyes, crossed the street, and put that terrible night behind him. In the end, what's revealed is that life goes on with us, or without us, right or wrong. And it's a sadness that's difficult to reconcile within your soul, which tells you that you do matter in the grand scheme of everything that happens in this crazy universe. That you are loved, and the world will miss you when you're gone. Yet, that's not something we can control. We don't get to decide when we enter, or even when we leave. We can only open our eyes when the light turns green, and keep moving through life until it changes to red. If nothing else, Gable Tosti understands that now, and realizes he can record every second of every day for the rest of his life. But the only moment he'll truly ever have is happening right now. And as I've said that, it's already gone. So when the light turns green for you, be sure not to blink. Just keep moving ahead and never look back, despite the pain, despite the memories, and most of all, despite this existence you've been forced to bear, that's the best any of us can do. Even Gable Tosti.